variety, culture, and class in America. Live from Long Island's Gold Coast, this is the Melissa Itell Duran Show on Breaking It Down Radio with co-host Frank McKay.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Melissa Itell Duran Show. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, the host each and every week, our host each and every week, she is also the subject of two documentaries. She is can be seen on Roku TV or Amazon Fire. You can see those two documentaries or at MelissaIteljuran.com. She's a Renaissance woman. She does so many things well. She's an educator. She's a wife. She's a dancer. She's a mom. And she does, again, so many things so well. Without further ado, Melissa Iteljuran, how are you?
I'm doing great, Frank. How are you?
Good. And we heard some good news yesterday. OJ died. And
yes, he did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
right.
I could say that without guilt, without worrying about karma, because OJ was a murderer. I mean, let's face it.
He was, yes, despite what he said, tried to lead us to believe in all these years. You know, the next year is the 30th anniversary of the trial of the century.
Wow.
And this June is the 30th anniversary of the murders, so he didn't make it to the anniversary. Oh shucks!
Yeah.
So, but I mean, he had hinted in his ex post. You know, he was very active in the last few years of his life on X, formerly known as Twitter. He had opened his account, and he said in February that he had been diagnosed with cancer and was starting chemo. He had not disclosed what kind of cancer. Now we know it was prostate cancer, and there are reports that he didn't catch it in time, and thus he's gone. He is deceased. But yes, it's been drawing many reactions across the spectrum, as expected, and you know, the Ron Goldman, the friend of his ex-wife, whom he almost decapitated, have been gone all these years, and their memories are still alive, but the impact of that trial is very raw, especially with the families. And I don't know who else is really mourning him, except maybe for his children. He had five children from over two marriages.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe if he has had any friends left, I don't know. But it's a mixed bag. In fact, the New York Post had a very interesting headline. O.J. Simpson, you know, running, the football star, running back, et cetera, Hollywood actor and murderer. The real killer is dead.
Yeah. I've always said that if there's a hell and I end up there, I'm going to take a good look around. If I don't see OJ down there, I'm going to be screaming my ass off. I mean,
okay, well, you're not going to hell. You're not going to ever get there. But you know what? I wish we could do a seance and contact the great beyond and say, any sign of OJ going down, you know? Has he passed through and gone really downward, you know? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Is he on fire or something?
Yeah, he's running touchdowns in hell. He's spiking fireballs instead of footballs.
Right.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I've got to say that when it happened, when I first heard it happened, and one of the first things that they did, it was in court, and they... I guess they were going to see if there was going to be enough evidence for a trial. I don't know what the legal term is for it. But this is after OJ. OJ was running away, right, from police, a whole bunch of slow speed chase, right, in a Ford Bronco. Everybody in the news, you might have been too young, Melissa, right? Well, you were certainly at the point of understanding.
But everybody, you know, I don't know if you've been following social media, but people have come out and said, oh, I remember this. This was on the news. I was I was playing. I heard this. I remember. I remember White Bronco.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I mean, and I don't know if White Bronco sales went up or down, but it was such a big deal, the Bronco, the slow speed chase. And Al Cowens, his buddy, that was his former offensive lineman who blocked for O.J. in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He said, it's me. Hey, you know who I am. Damn it. It's A.C., you know, and he said, OJ's got a gun to his head and he's going to commit suicide and all this. And, you know, like everybody was going to be, tell him to calm down. We don't want OJ to hurt himself, whatever. But I mean, it couldn't have been more obvious that he was guilty, that he killed these people. And while this was going on, I was watching Larry King Live. And while this was going on, Larry King said, we just got a, over the wire, we got from Hertz Rent-A-Car, they've dismissed OJ as their spokesman. I felt like saying, how tough a decision was that? Did they call the whole board together and say, hey, guys, what do you think? He's got a gun to his head in the back of a Ford Bronco. He's going to kill himself. He just murdered his wife and Ron Goldman. What do you think? Should we, let's take a vote. Do we need a vote, guys? You know, how tough a decision was that?
I don't know, but that could have been a sketch on SNL at that time. They were much better back then, I heard. But but I also heard something else now, because now a lot of information is coming out of the woodwork Cowling, who was, I guess they lived close together. They were neighbors in California, in that neighborhood. What was that?
Brentwood.
Brentwood.
Yep.
Right. And they were friends. But if OJ needed a favor, if he needed something, he always could count on Cowling. And Cowling would never say no. You know, he was like, okay, OJ, I'm going to drop everything. I'll take your kid here or whatever. Whatever it was.
Sycophant.
You know, he was. Yeah. So I guess I don't know how he found OJ in such a desperate state. I don't know if OJ called him and said, I have to run. I've got the suitcase. I can't stay here. Can you drive me and drop me over the border?
Yeah, just unbelievable. And again, Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, MelissaEiteljuren.com. Check out the documentaries there, the two different documentaries. And she's wonderful, and she's lovely to look at. And I mean that respectfully.
Thank you.
And MelissaEiteljuren.com. Melissa, when this started happening, it was so bizarre to me. It was so bizarre to everybody. And OJ, it was like OJ wasn't just a football player. He was like, you saw him on commercials, and you saw him, on TV shows, and he was so liked. He was like one of the safe, quote unquote, black men early on in the 70s. That society, so we're like, yeah, he's one of us. You know, he was as white a black man as you could. And I'm being respectful when I say that, because keep in mind we were just coming out of the civil rights movement, and people were so afraid of militant African American people. But OJ wasn't that. He was safe for everybody. So in 1970s, you know, he was a Heisman Trophy winner. He rushed for 2,000 yards with the Buffalo Bills, which was unheard of. He was handsome. He was
Yes,
athletic. He was every personable. He had a big smile, and you didn't think of him as color. You know, you didn't think of him black, white. You just thought of him as OJ. That's OJ. Everybody loves OJ.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's why he was able to transition into media, television, the commercials and movies. I think he's best known for the Naked Gun series.
Yes.
I think he was in all the movies, all the Naked Gun series. In fact, I've seen photos of him at the last Naked Gun premiere with Nicole. Now he was in the process. They were in the process of divorcing. At least she wanted a divorce or a separation, and he must have talked her into going to the premiere with the hopes of reconciliation. And she brought the kids.
Yeah.
And this was some months before or weeks before the actual killing. I mean, that's you look, there are pictures of them, and they're all smiles. The kids are there. The kids are little, and they were all at the premiere of the latest Naked Gun movie. And the Naked Gun movies were a lot of fun, and he was good in those.
Yeah, and it was funny.
Yeah, yeah. And he, you know, for people who don't know his, who aren't aware of his movie history, he actually, I read up on this, he actually started filming, starring in some, having bit roles, while he was still playing, you know, in his Heisman Trophy days. They were uncredited. Nobody knew who he was. He didn't get credit. He had screen credit for the bit roles he had on film during his Heisman Trophy days. But then afterwards, and once he made the big, you know, he made NFL and the fame and everything, he started getting, you know, more offers and having more, I guess, supporting roles. He was in a movie, and I heard about this, back in the late 70s, called Capricorn One.
Yes, I remember that.
Which is, they say, now becoming a lot of people have seen it. It's become, it was, it did become a cult classic. I don't
conspiracy
know
theory.
Prime.
Yes,
it is on Amazon Prime.
No, that I don't know, but it's a conspiracy theory.
Right, right, about the moon landing.
Yes.
In this case, it was, they were supposed to go to, I don't know, it wasn't the moon, but some other planet, and it was all fake.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, he came up in this world, and it's, and Hollywood. He loved that. He loved being in that environment. He loved that, you know, and that he was married at the time to his, the first wife. I don't know if he met her in college, but the woman who was the mother of the older children. And I don't know how happy she was in Hollywood society, but not too long after he started getting, you know, a name in movies, you know, he started looking around, seeing what, you know, how do I better myself? You know, maybe I can, how do I improve my lot? Maybe I can meet better women, you know, I can, and he started, that's where he met Nicole, who was a much younger, and was waitressing. And Nicole was, you know, she was younger. She was she was his ticket to assimilation.
Mm, yeah, no doubt. And that's what he wanted. He wanted he wanted that. And she's blonde, blue eyed, mm-hmm. buxom,
beautiful, yeah.
beautiful woman. And you know, yeah. she could be a model easily. You know, she could be.
Oh yeah.
You know, and she was just this beautiful woman. And and OJ had to have her. He was married to a more traditional African American woman before
yes,
that.
He was.
He had his first daughter at 21 years old, and that I think was Arnell
yes.
Simpson.
Yeah. And then the son, who was
Justin or no? Justin was
just, no.
That was McColl's.
The second family. Yeah.
Yes.
The older son. I don't know if he's named after him. He was kind of. He was involved, and I don't know if he's involved, but he was mentioned in the early days of the murder investigation. He was there and his name is still up there in conspiracy theories that he was the one who actually did the murders, and his father covered for him. I don't know about that.
No.
But I don't. But he was there to meet the Bronco when it drove back home, when it drove into the driveway at the Rockingham house.
Yes, right. That's right. You know, it's funny. And again, Melissa, I tell Jordan is the voice you're hearing, Frank McKay here. But with Rockingham, I went there, and I don't know if it was 2000. I went to the murder scene, and mm-hmm. I was just there. I wasn't doing any radio. At the time, I wasn't doing any radio or TV. I wasn't writing. I just was. Curious, you know, because I saw so much of it. I was just kind of a spectator, a sightseer, and I had a real epiphany that day, because first of all, they switched what the houses look like, right? It was a very high end block, Rockingham, and Brentwood was nothing like the Brentwood here on Long Island, which is,
no.
you know, I lived in for a while, so I could say it, but I mean, a very low end, you know, to middle class mm-hmm. area, Brentwood, New York on Long Island, but Brentwood, California was elite, you know, movie stars and celebrities all over the place. And the murder happened there. So I'm driving up and down, and I'm looking for the numbers. They actually changed the numbers on the block. Yeah. Right? They changed the numbers because it became such a tourist attraction. And, the people on the block, you know, not only the people who bought the house, but the people on the block wanted this, you know, wanted this changed.
Yeah, the notoriety and everything, yeah.
They wanted it. And what I learned, the epiphany was this. I was just casually checking it out the same way I would check out, I don't know, you know, Charlie or in your neck of the woods, the place where Groucho Marx lived, or W.C. Fields lived in Greatland.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it is exactly, there in Kings Point or Great Neck Estates, but it's somewhere around there where the prominent homes are, because in the 30s, in the 40s, and even as late as the 50s, you had a lot of actors who lived in Great Neck and before they made the exodus to California.
Yeah, and it was there. But the same way I would look at a house like that, I was looking for this, and I saw a guy walking his dog. And I'm sure it wasn't the same dog, and I don't think it was the same guy that became the one who discovered the gruesome murder. But I kind of, you know, pulled up to him and you know, set out the window. I said, sir, I said, I'm sorry to even ask, but is this the house? And he says, you know, he said, no, it's okay. Don't apologize. But it's, you're in the area. The name, the places have changed and everything else. But he said, just so you know, they were friends of mine. And he said, I understand, you know, the curiosity and, we never get used to it. But I said, oh, I apologize. I'm so sorry. But here I am. Just like as a tourist, just, oh, where'd the murders happen, guy? Meanwhile, this is like a good friend of his. And he said he knew them both. And
Oh, boy, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was the same dog. I don't know what happened to that dog. If it was, it probably, I don't know how soon if the dog passed afterwards, but I think it was taken either by Nicole's family or someone else. But,
yeah. This guy walking the dog. When I meant by the other dog, like there was another guy walking his dog, not their dog, but walking his, and he kind of discovered it. Yeah, you're right. I don't know we don't even know what happened to the dog. I'm sure there's some account. Somebody would. So much has been talked about it, but here's what happened. I mean, it's just think of what happened, how significant the murders and the trial, the subsequent trial. Became really reality TV, and I know they always point to the real world, and that was the start of it all. The O.J. Simpson trial was the start of reality TV, and it became obsessive. You know, it became to the point where everybody was like, "Wow, this is must see." People missed work to see certain days if certain things were coming on. It was a phenomenon. Like, you wouldn't believe, I was obsessed. I was just as obsessed by it as many of the other people. People unapologetically watched it. Also, the Gulf War, the first Gulf War launched CNN, but this solidified CNN as as an entity, and it really started cable. Cable news stations across the board.
Core TV. Televised trials. You're right. Mm-hmm.
You were gonna say I cut you off, but right at that point, everything changed.
Yeah. No, I'm just adding. Yeah, it's okay. I'm just adding to what the litany of developments in the wake of this. Yeah, we Core TV, of course, CNN and. I don't know. They didn't have Fox in those days.
No, but it came afterwards, and this is one of the things that launched cable news. So, you know, you got to say this is the genesis of Fox and CNBC and MSNBC started here.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, in the years subsequent to that, you know, crime TV shows with attorneys who now became television commentators, you have them... Greta Van Susteen, who became a Fox commentator or CNN commentator, legal expert during the trial. She also went on to Fox, and she was retained by Court TV.
Yeah.
She got her name during this.
Yes.
And in fact, on her show, she has a show on one of the other cable channels. She did a retrospective last night about OJ, and she was interviewing other people, other attorneys who were legal experts who were there and covering it, and that's where they got all their exposure, their television exposure, and not just about herself. She wasn't talking about herself, but she figured prominently in this whole, in reporting this, because this was an 11 month trial. And it's amazing what the impact this had on television and coverage of these high profile cases. And this was way before we had social media.
Yeah, it changed. And again, I'll preface it by saying that the Gulf War was the predecessor to this, but it changed not only entertainment, news coverage, but O.J. Simpson trial changed society in so many ways. And we thought, watching it, this is so obvious. They're going to throw away the key. They're going to, convict him and throw away the key. And then some people were saying they're never going to do it because it was a predominantly African-American or black jury. And that was the big mistake that they made was doing it in Los Angeles. I don't know why they would do it in Los Angeles. If they did it in Brentwood, they would have convicted him, right? Because Brentwood would have been celebrities and here's a guy. They didn't care whether he was black or white or whatever. They would have said he's a murderer, whatever. But we were fresh off the Rodney King beating.
Yeah.
And Rodney King,
1992.
Yeah, 1992, just 2 years prior to the murders, was Rodney King, and those guys got away with a lot. I won't say murder because they didn't murder King, but those cops beat the living hell out of Rodney King, and I know he was running away from them, he was fleeing them, whatever it was. They beat the living hell out of him, and they just—you see the video, and you couldn't help but be disturbed. It was terrible, terrible what he did. He wasn't a murderer, Rodney King. He wasn't anything like that. But they beat the living hell out of him. I'm not saying he wasn't a criminal. He was a criminal, but he was like a low end criminal.
Right.
And they beat.
Petty criminal.
Yeah, they beat the living hell out of him, and when they were acquitted, the cops. All of them were acquitted from that beating, and nobody did any jail time. L.A. was on fire, and there were riots. And it wasn't just L.A. It spread here. We had riots here, and they kept it quiet. And I know because we had a gig in 1992 of a band we were managing, and we went into we were about to go into the city, and the club said, oh, no, don't come in. He said, because of the riots. I said, the riots in California? He said, no, we're having protests here, but they're turning into riots. So we called up. They said, you got to call the cops. If you're going to go anywhere near the city, you got to call the police stations, and there's code words. And this was unbelievable, too, But they got to say, is there any police activity in this area, whatever. So we called the police precincts, and they were... Dinkins was the mayor, I guess, right? Dinkins was still the mayor.
Dinkins.
It wasn't Giuliani yet.
No, not yet. No.
Yeah, and probably this is one of the things. But the cops would say, "No, I wouldn't come in." And there is protests going on. That's what they kept. And Tompkins Square Park. There were also protests going on here. And the protests in New York City were just bottles being thrown and different things like that. But it was a disaster in New York City and in other places. New York City lied and they kept it quiet. But I know for a fact there were riots going on in New York, lesser than L.A. And they wisely lied because they kept it under wraps. When it got to the O.J. Time and O.J.'s jury had a chance to pay back They acquitted O.J. Simpson in like 3 minutes. They deliberated for 3 minutes. They came right out and said, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Not guilty. And O.J. nodded his head and he thanked them. But you know what? They wanted to give an African-American man a break. They gave the wrong one a break. I'm sure there was some that everyone you can imagine that's not a murderer deserved a break before this piece of garbage got away with it. Frank McKay here with Melissa Eitel-Jern. Melissa, your thoughts on all that?
Oh, absolutely. Right on the money. Yeah. Yeah. O.J. benefited definitely from the backlash from the Rodney King case. And a lot of blacks in those areas, especially where the case was tried, were up in arms, and the jury was sympathetic to O.J. This was their revenge against the actions of the LAPD. And had they not changed the venue, I think the outcome would have been very different. You know, and also O.J. had the dream team. And something interesting I heard on the radio last night. Frank Morano, whose show is now syndicated, originates from WABC radio, and he was playing portions of an interview he conducted with the late F. Lee Bailey, who joined the Dream Team at the behest of none other than Robert Shapiro. Remember, that was the original attorney.
Yep.
Robert Shapiro and F. Lee Bailey were actually good friends, and toward the end of the trial, they hated each other. They had a tremendous falling out.
Yeah.
And in the clip that Frank Morano played, F. Lee Bailey was trashing Shapiro, saying he should have never been on the case. And these were best friends, so something really happened. Something went down during that time, and he let out. This interview obviously was done before his death in F. Lee Bailey's death in 2021. And he said, Frank Morano asked him, were you surprised? Were you shocked at the verdict? He said, no, because I knew already. I knew ahead of time. I knew that night, that evening, the bailiff told me, and he told O.J.
Wow.
that the jury had come back, and that the next morning that was the decision. And it's incredible. I mean, I don't know if you want to cast doubts on that, but F. Lee Bailey said he knew even before.
Yeah, I don't doubt it at all. You know, I don't.
Yeah. And none other than Alan Dershowitz, who also was a prominent member of the Dream Team.
Yep.
He must have been busy yesterday. I mean, he was giving interviews left and right. And he was, you know, when they asked him, how did you feel about O.J.'s passing? I'm kind of sad. You know, O.J. represented, and it was the fight against racism. He's kind of sad.
Yeah,
he's so sad.
Yeah.
And he and the Dream Team were able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the blood on those socks that were found in the garbage, you know, O.J. had dumped a lot of stuff in the garbage. That blood was planted by one of the detectives, not Mark Furman, but the other detective whose name I can't remember because he was a racist. He and Furman were determined to plant this on O.J., so they mixed the blood. How did you know, Professor Dershowitz? We did a test of the stain. That was not human blood. That was doctored blood. And there was some kind of. I mean, and he's so, you know, he's just saying, I'm so sad. I'm saddened. Yeah. I
mean, O.J. was like a freedom fighter. O.J. was
a freedom fighter.
Yeah.
Yes, he'll go down in history as a victim of LAPD racism.
A great man. A martyr.
A great man.
A martyr.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. Just amazing to me. Melissa Eitel-Jern is the voice you're hearing. Frank McKay here with Melissa. It's amazing, but it was such a phenomenon that you can't overstate how important it was. And by the way, one of the Dream Team, and he was a much lesser member of the Dream Team, was one Robert Kardashian, who died early on, but his children benefited because I never heard the words Kardashian before O.J.
I never did either, but yeah,
they became household names.
There was a history of going back between between Simpsons and Nicole and the family, and Robert Kardashian, and then up until his divorce from the
Jenna.
Now the granddam of the family, Kris Jenner. At that time, she was Kris Kardashian, and then and I think shortly after that, she met and married. He's the former Bruce Jenner, now known as Caitlyn, and they were friends. I mean, she knew Nicole. She socialized with Nicole, and she was heartbroken when Nicole passed. And I think that, I don't think she had ever had words with
OJ.
Yeah, I don't even know if she spoke to him immediately after that. She might have seen him at the funeral, but her husband, who, by the way, Robert Kardashian, was an attorney in training. He had his law license had elapsed, and he conveniently renewed that, but he was not up to par for that. He was not a great big contributor to the Dream Team.
But he was trusted. He was a trusted advisor to OJ.
Yeah.
And I was a friend of OJ's. He was his buddy.
Yeah. And right.
Yeah. And he probably helped OJ pick out this Dream Team, and. Johnny Cochran, of course, did the bulk of the work.
Robert Shapiro was the first one on the scene. He was recommended by Kardashian. And then, the others trickled in. You got the big player, Johnny Cochran, I think, who really carried it.
Barry Sheck.
And then Barry Sheck for the DNA, which was in its infancy in those days.
Yep.
And then, they brought in I don't know if Effie Bailey came after Dershowitz. But Effie Bailey had the name,
Yeah.
He was famous for getting off a lot of people.
Yeah, Boston Strangler, right? When did you get the Boston?
Yeah. Patty Hearst.
Yeah. That's right. Effie Bailey was a legendary a trial attorney and defense attorney. But you want to know what happened, too, was, and I remember Robert Shapiro was one of the first people to go in when they were, he was trying to argue that OJ shouldn't even be in custody. There were all kinds of rumors, and they were talking about a bloody glove, and then the media got a hold of it, and then there was a bloody ski mask, and then there was all these different things. So Robert Shapiro came in and said, Your Honor, can we see the bloody ski mask? Is the bloody ski mask here? Oh, there is. No, we don't have. Is there any? Can somebody produce the bloody ski mask? Oh no! And then he asked for something else. What about the this and what about that and what about? But I remember him saying the bloody ski mask, and his point was, don't believe everything you hear. That this is this is going to be a long trial. And at that point, we knew that he was going to take the tact that he was going to try to prove that he was not guilty. And it was unbelievable because he had a gun to his head in the back of the Bronco on a slow speed chase. I think the Knicks were playing Houston Rockets for the championship, the NBA championship in 2004. And they broke into the game. I don't know if it was game six, and they showed. They kept the game going, but they had in the corner of the TV, you saw a white Bronco slowly driving away on the freeway, and all of these cops behind it. I mean, a parade of LAPD behind it. And, we already knew that OJ had a gun to his head. Al Collins had said that, and we had the audio of that, and it was just, Melissa, it was amazing, and that's where we got Court TV. That's where we got, really, reality TV. And by the way, reality TV hasn't lost its edge, not lost its edge, but hasn't lost its impact yet. I mean, the media, the people that are in programming decided, hey, you know what? We could do cheap things. I think Survivor is still on air, by the way.
Yeah, it is, and it's, what, 20-something season?
Yeah, I mean, Survivor, all of these different, what is it, The Greatest Race and The Amazing Race, these different things, they're all there, but it started with OJ. That was reality,
and we
were obsessed with it.
We have OJ to thank for that. OJ was placed on this earth Now, he had a negative influence later on, you know, the murderer, but he was also the key to
reality TV.
Oh, God, it's so twisted to say that, but it's true.
It's 100%
true. It
really is. Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Again, MelissaItellJuran.com. Everybody check out the documentaries there. Go to Amazon Fire, Roku TV. Check her out there. But, Melissa, getting back to OJ, a major impact. The one thing I think about, oh, and by the way, you're in Nassau County, and I don't want to give up the guy who asked me this, but back in, I guess, 2003, 2004, whatever it was, I could probably pinpoint the day even if I thought about it. Someone asked me, and they said OJ was playing golf in Muttontown, and in Muttontown, which is Nassau County. And I don't know if it was at the country club or whatever, but he said, let me ask you a strange question. Would you go to lunch with me and O.J. Simpson? And I said, oh, no, no, no. Now, this is before I had a radio show, before I had a TV show. I hadn't written any books. So the thing is, like, if I was doing those things, I would have said yes, you know, and then try to interview him, try to see if I could get a, weird confession out of him somehow. Something, I would have tried or whatever. But I turned down a lunch with O.J. Simpson once. And again, if those listening to us who might know, who might think they know who was the person who approached me, it's not that person. It's a non-sports person. A prominent person, but a non-sports person, who asked if I would have the lunch with, and I said absolutely not. And all I could think of is that this guy killed the mother of his children, Do we know how they turned out? His kids with Nicole, because I mean and Justin, I think they are.
Justin, right? Sydney was the girl, the older child. Sydney,
yes.
And Justin was very young. They for a time they lived with the Browns, with their mother's family, and of course after the acquittal, OJ was allowed visitation rights, and the family, I don't know. They said, well, they have to see their father. I don't know how you can face this guy, knowing, especially since one of the sisters, Denise, who was she was a little younger than Nicole. But she looked almost exactly like her.
A brunette,
with
right?
Brown hair.
Yeah.
Yes, with dark hair. She was vociferously fighting him in the media. She was represented by Gloria Allred, the very famous feminist attorney.
Yep.
She's still making headlines. She does represent women. She is a women's rights attorney. She was interviewed, in fact, yesterday, of course, about that, because she represented Denise Brown. And maybe Denise wasn't around when he had visitation rights, but they had to let the kids see him. They grew up with the Browns. Eventually, they moved with their father. They tried to keep a low profile, live their own lives, and I think they were in Florida.
Yes.
And the son went into real estate, I believe. I don't know what the daughter did.
I think a restaurateur or something. Did she open a restaurant?
The son or the daughter?
The daughter. I think she became very heavy.
Yes, she did. She did. She looked like her mother.
Yeah.
But they did not talk about their lives. They kept a very low profile. I imagine they were still in touch with their father. I don't know how they could process that, knowing the notoriety of their father, the fact that he had been charged with their mother's murder and the murder of Ron Goldman. The brutality of it all. I mean, this is all over. You can look up, if you really want to stomach this, you can Google autopsy photos or crime scene photos of Nicole and Ron. You'll see everything.
They're brutal. He was almost decapitated.
She was, yeah. You can even read, I think you can still find the autopsy reports. I mean, this is all, this is common knowledge.
Yeah.
I don't know how this affected them, how they got through, their childhood. They grew up they only spent a handful of years with her.
Yeah, amazing. It really is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget, he was a wife beater.
Yeah, that was an absolute. I mean, I don't think he denied that at the time. I think he had to admit it in order to get back into the marriage. Didn't he have to go for therapy and things like that?
Oh, I'm not sure about that, but yeah. But the 911 calls were played. You still have them. They played one of them the other day.
She says, "You know who he is. It's O.J. Simpson. Yeah. You know who he is."
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They must have seen what was going on. They must have some memory of that. And it's horrible.
Crazy. So
despite all the money, the privilege, the Hollywood lifestyle, they did not have an enviable life, not in my opinion.
Well, let's, look, this story isn't over. I mean, it's, the ending is clear. I mean, O.J.'s dead. But the impact is going to be there's going to be fallout. In closing, Melissa, what's your thought? How long will there be a talk about OJ's passing, OJ dying, and did this bring up all the memories? Will this last a little while? By the next time we talk, will we still not us necessarily, but will people still be talking about OJ?
Well, if they've televised, if they perhaps
funeral,
have
right.
pictures of the funeral, right, the funeral maybe, but there people will talk about it. I'm sure you'll hear something. I mean, it's front page, on the tabloids, it's a front page thing. The New York Times has it prominently on the first page, but it's not the lead story, obviously. They don't want to shed too much attention on what's always been a very sensational part of our media history.
Yeah, no doubt. Melissa, as always, we thank everyone for listening each and every week.
We definitely do. We love you all. And, we appreciate you. We want you all to be safe. We're in this together. We've got to, we've got to get through the rest of this year. We don't know what November will bring. So OJ is just a diversion into an event that happened 30 years ago that, I guess, shocked us. And in some ways it's come to an end. There's some closure. I don't know how the families feel. I mean, the Goldmans will never mention him by name. All they said was, you know what? We thank the public for keeping Ron's name in light of all this.
Yeah, yeah. Our hearts go out to them and the victims, and just amazing. Melissa, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
And to everyone out there, may your dreams be free of O.J. Frightening. You got O.J. in there with a knife. It's a frightening thought.
Don't think about him. Things happen when people sleep. Fall asleep. They start having these terrible, realistic nightmares. You don't want to be facing O.J. You don't need that.
O.J. Kruger. O.J. Kruger. Freddie Simpson. Anyway, to everybody, thank you for listening each and every week. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on the Melissa Itell Jurin Show.
You've been listening to Melissa Itell Jurin and co-host Frank McKay on Breaking It Down Radio.